Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, roster is set for now. 53-man for the Texans. They get that stuff cut down yesterday. I would expect that this will not be the exact 53 they roll into week one with. I'm guessing that the staff, the personnel group, and the coaches are hard at work taking a look at what else is out there. Maybe even looking at some teams where there's some familiarity with guys on the coaching staff. We'll see. We'll hear from Nick Caserio in about an hour or so. What's the biggest thing you're hoping to hear from Nick Caserio today, Seth?
I'm really intrigued by the British Brooks stuff. I wonder what, I mean, it feels like, as Nick Caserio told Pat McAfee last week, that there are about five guys maybe that they were trying to make decisions on, or five spots they were trying to make decisions on. And it felt like in that final preseason game, they were going to see how British Brooks really could do as a blocker. Because there were about, I think there were more than 10 plays. I went through and I just grabbed video of all of his blocking, or not even when he was blocking, him lined up as a tight end or an H-back or a fullback in non-running back positions. He had 10 or more of those. And every time, not every time, but there were a few times when he had good blocks where British Brooks was looking towards the sideline. And to me, like, and he was yelling at somebody and pointing at somebody. I think somebody gave him a hell of a pep talk before the game and said something to, this would be my suspicion. Somebody said, look, man, this is your opportunity to make this roster. We want to see if you can do this. And this dude took the assignment and got an A++ on it.
Yeah, that's a great
So, like, and it was really cool to go back and watch that part of it. I watched the TV copy so I could get that feel for it. But there was one play where he was lined up as a tight end and he released on a route, but he gave a jam to the defensive end first, you know, to take some pepper out of his pass rush. Yeah. And it was as good of a jolt to another human as I've seen out of a Texans fullback since Vontae Leach.
Yes.
And it was awesome. Because he took that dude out of the play. He took three steps off of his pass rush. Mm-hmm. And then he was a wide open receiver after that, too. Then there was another play, Sean. Okay. On the fade to Nico. That, you know, okay, why? The fade to Nico in the end zone, where you're like, oh, no, I'm sorry, it wasn't that one. It wasn't that one. But it was Tim Boyle had an option on a play. He could either go left, and he threw a quick route out to the sideline. But the play that they had set up on the other side was British Brooks going out on a screen as a lead blocker for Cam Akers.
Oh.
And there was only one defender.
Oh, wow.
And oh my God! I wish they would have gone to Cam on that, because it would have been British Brooks in the open field versus a safety.
Oh,
and beyond that, possibly a touchdown or a huge gain.
Yeah.
So the possibilities with him as a guy who can also run the ball and he can be used as a receiver. Like, that's everything you want in a modern fullback.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, look, we'd love to have a fullback out there, but he's got to be a capable receiver and bring something that makes the defense not so zeroed in on what you can and cannot do. I love the prospect for what British Brooks might be able to do for this offense.
Yeah, and to me, that might have been the biggest surprise yesterday. Not that I was surprised because he doesn't deserve it, but just because – and it's hard for undrafted guys who really, you know, he hadn't popped in camp. He really popped for the first time in the fourth quarter of that Giants game when he scored two touchdowns. You know, like, he scored a tough, hard-nosed touchdown up the middle, and then the touchdown he scored to put the capper on things, he ran to the edge and got the edge and broke a 15-yard touchdown down the sideline, you know, in the red zone.
Yeah.
So he was doing good things already last week, and he had a really good week of practice at fullback. And then, obviously, as you pointed out, Seth, just did a lot of amazing things in the game. That, I think, is the biggest surprise. I think the other big surprises for me, and I don't know, like, now, once we now know that Case Keenum was dealing with a foot injury, I'm not surprised he's on IR. It was just shocking. Oh, crap, Case is not going to play this year. Case was a very important component of this team last year. He won a game for them in Tennessee, and we know how important he is to CJ. Now, the CJ stuff, I'm assuming Case remains in the building all season, providing whatever mentorship and enlightenment he's been giving to C.J. Stroud. That should still exist.
I think he'll still be a good resource. In some ways, this is always, you know, I've always wondered when it comes to like, oh, hey, this guy can be a coach on the field. I always think, yeah. But you know who's a lot cheaper to pay? Coaches.
Coaches.
So, that's how I used to feel. I've had enough conversations, and I like looking back on my own experience. There's something that a player in the room can provide that assistant coaches can't, and part of that is just that. You know, assistant coaches are involved in game planning. They got a whole lot of stuff going on. They got however many guys they have to worry about. You know, and sometimes it's more the stuff on the fringes or the stuff that's not in the syllabus, so to speak, that the player can be a huge asset for.
Oh, yeah.
And not to mention, there's less of a barrier there, you know?
Yep.
There's less of a psychological barrier there.
That's a good
I think he can be a huge asset for the team still. And he'll still make his player salary.
He will.
But he could perhaps be a really valuable assistant coach.
Especially this player. I mean, can you pick a guy off the top of your head that has the breadth of experience in different systems and on different teams and in different roles? And Case has been a highly paid starter. He's been a practice squad guy. You know, like, I don't know that there's anybody who has more different experiences to pull from than Case Keenum.
I never get more defensive on the behalf of other people than when backup quarterbacks who are in the media now get trashed for their backup status because honestly, they're my favorite people to talk to about scheme because of that, everything that you just said. Generally, they've been in a lot of different systems, and Case wasn't a backup his whole career, but he's been in a lot of systems. You know, he was kind of a fringe guy.
Yeah.
And also, though, because they have to make it with their brains. Mm-hmm. There's no guy that makes it 10 years as a backup quarterback who's kind of a dullard.
Right.
Like, they gotta really be able to pick up new systems. They gotta be dependable so that a coach feels like, okay, we can trust this guy if he goes in. So, yeah, for all those reasons. And you know, Case, the other thing Case has going for him is that he was the ultimate man, came from a spread system in college, and was incredibly raw when he got to the NFL. Had a lot of bad habits based on, and I'm not criticizing the Art Briles system as a very effective college system, but it's a hard one to translate to the NFL. And so Case had to really learn a lot of those very basic lessons to get himself to being a solid and steady, capable NFL starter.
Yeah.
So I think he can empathize with a lot of the stuff that young quarterbacks are going through.
When he came into the league, well, he came into the league in 2012 as a practice squad guy, but when he got his chance in 2013, I remember that Kansas City game was his first start that year. That was the horrible year for the Texans when they went 2-14. But it felt like every game Case started, Kansas City game, the Indianapolis game, the one where Gary Kubiak had the stroke at halftime, I think the Arizona game that year as well. Like, Case was gangbusters in the first half, and then the second half they just pounded the red blitz button on him the whole time, and he's running backwards.
He was on all the classic college kid scramble stuff, like just spinning for no reason, eyes dropping, all the stuff, jump passes, all the stuff that you don't want to see out of a young quarterback. He had that, and that's what's so impressive, honestly, with his career is that it wasn't. I mean, there are a lot of Cougs at the time that would defend him no matter what, and like, the fact that they hated Gary Kubiak for, I don't know, giving him a chance to play in the NFL,
being the guy that signed him? Yeah.
Right. But no, that it was real. He had some serious deficits to his game, and it's a huge testament to his work ethic that he was able to fix all of that and stay in the league as long as he did.
The last one for me, there were other big surprises, but the one I want to make sure we hit on, because I want to get to this, what's going on in Cleveland right now. It's fascinating. Kurt Heinisch being one of the two guys that they can use an IR short-term designation for and not be part of the 53. The other one was Christian Harris, who's understandable. He's a guy that's been flashing Pro Bowl-level potential. Heinisch is he's a grinder. He's a lunch pail guy. If you're using that designation on Kurt Heinisch, it means you didn't use it on Noah Brown, you didn't use it on Andrew Beck, any other injured guys you could have used it on. This tells me that Kurt Heinisch is, when he's done with whatever this injury is, he's going to be on this team for a spell, because otherwise, why would you use this designation for him?
Yeah, the thing with Kurt Heinisch is that he's, like, honestly, he's the kind of guy that I think D'Amico Ryans has a good respect for because of his dependability.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for the guy that is where he's supposed to be all the time and doesn't necessarily flash physically and with playmaking, but there's a stability and a dependability there that I think a former linebacker appreciates. And that's something that doesn't show up in the PFF grades or anything like that. And he's always going to be at risk of a guy like Khalil Davis, who's very similar in some respects, but also flashes more often. He's perpetually going to be a replaceable guy, but I think D'Amico probably values that part of him right now.
All right, so I've been poking my head in on some Cleveland radio of late. This cut actually came across my Twitter timeline last night, but 92.3 The Fan is our sister station up there. They're the flagship for the Cleveland Browns. Their afternoon show is Nick Wilson and Dustin Fox, who used to play in the NFL. He played for Ohio State, I know that. May have had a cup of coffee in the NFL, too. That's their afternoon show. The big topic up in Cleveland is they kept four quarterbacks. So whereas most of the teams, a majority kept two, some kept three. The Texans are in that two category. The Browns kept Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and then one other who's escaping me right now. They kept four quarterbacks. The thought is that they're going to be trading either Jameis or the other guy whose name escapes me right now. So Jameis Winston, who's been a good backup in the NFL, you know, highly drafted guy, but been a good backup. And by the way, has been the guy that's popped up on all the viral videos for Cleveland this year as the guy who's the vocal front-facing leader of the football team during the preseason, right?
It's Tyler Huntley, by the way.
Tyler Huntley, thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. So they're either trying to move Jameis Winston or Tyler Huntley, reportedly.
Yeah.
The theory that's being espoused up there, and you're going to hear Nick Wilson talk about it here, is that there's a fear with Cleveland, they hypothesize, that we might be in a Flacco 2.0 situation here, where Joe Flacco came in, was gangbusters, and immediately became way more popular than the guy they're paying $230 million to. Here's Nick Wilson with that theory.
I'll say this. If the idea that Jameis, who's outgoing, who's fun, who's got all this energy, if the idea is that he is a threat to Deshaun Watson, and I'm saying from their standpoint.
Yeah, go ahead, say it for me, because I'm going to say the exact same thing.
This thing's cooked. There's not a shot in hell this is going to work out. If we're 3 years into this and you're worried about Deshaun's psyche because of a backup quarterback, and again, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just acknowledging that could be the possibility. If we're worried about the feelings or Deshaun's ability to maintain a locker room because somebody else has, I don't know, really good at talking in front of people, if that ever came out from this, it would cause me to lose. I mean, all remaining faith that I would have in Deshaun.
Yeah, dude, when the first Jameis pep talk that I saw, like 2 weeks ago, this is before the CeCe's Pizza one.
Yeah.
My initial thought was, what's Deshaun doing right now?
It's like there's a house fire. Let's be sure we get rid of all the water because we don't want people... We don't want people talking about how the water might douse out the flames.
Right.
So we don't want to distract people from the house fire itself.
Dude.
Get rid of the fire hoses, okay?
What?
Because the very issue is an indication that there's a much larger issue. There's something amiss if you're so worried about the psyche or the actual situation of your quarterback that's what needs to happen. This isn't like Tom Brady being kind of disgruntled about Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
This is much different than that.
Nick Wilson, the host there, is being clear. Like, this isn't something he's reporting. They're just as close observers to the situation and what it's been since Deshaun got there. He's saying this is a distinct possibility. Do you buy that theory?
I don't. This is where I would give the Browns a little bit of a break if that is indeed what they would be thinking. I mean, if we just go by QBR, so QBR 50 is about, it's a scale of 150 is like your average NFL quarterback.
Right.
In his last two seasons, Jameis has been a 34.7 QBR and a 35.6 QBR.
Okay.
Jameis has done great work in maturing in a lot of ways. You know, stopped drinking alcohol a long time ago. You can tell by his physique and his weird workout videos that, he's a different dude now than he was when he was a younger player.
I don't think
he's the guy that they look at as an actual threat to come in and play really well.
Okay.
But if that's how they look at him, is he worth the distraction of being the fan favorite or the guy in waiting?
Does this change your opinion at all?
Hey, man, it's just about having fun, man.
Yes, sir.
Remember the time you played your best football game of your life.
Yes, sir.
Remember the time after that victory you went to CC Pizza and celebrated with the boys.
Yes, yes,
for real. Feel it in your heart, man.
Okay.
It's a long way back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Let's not leave it without a victory.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So put everything you got on the line today. Let's have a game of memory, man. I remember. Let's go.
Remember.
Family on three. One, two, three.
I'll tell you what. You know what? You know what, Sean?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that guy that was just talking about his QBR in the last two seasons, where he was mostly as a backup, that guy was an idiot, because in 2021, he had a 69.8 QBR.
That was with New Orleans,
seven
right?
Starts.
That
was when he had an actual stretch as the starter and got injured. So you could go by that. Two sides to the coin is, all right, look, all of this time has been as a backup, or he started three games in 2022 for the Saints.
Man, a chance.
So, all right, not really fair to judge him based off of that small sample size. But back just not too long ago, he was a winning quarterback. He had a 5-2 record that year. I mean, he was doing some good things. So, that guy was an idiot who was just saying that before.
It goes to show you how good a team the Browns have built that this is their quarterback. Their quarterback is clogging up their salary cap. He might be super soft when it comes to people liking him and not liking him. They might have to be trading popular backups away. And yet I think the Browns are viewed as a team that's maybe not like Chiefs or Ravens level, but it would shock anybody if they made the postseason and won a couple games.
Honestly, and to defend the Browns even a little bit further, if you take everything else out of it, off-field stuff, just take all the off-field stuff out of it. I mean, that's just a moral minefield they were willing to walk right through. This roster, if they were getting Deshaun Watson as he looked in 2020, this is a Super Bowl caliber
Absolutely,
roster.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so I get why they made the aggressive move. I don't think they misjudged where they were in their development or anything. They have a really good roster, and yet just the most important position in all of sports, they are completely spinning in the wind on.
They missed. They missed. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Justin Verlander back on the mound yesterday. What did Espada think? What does Espada think after two Verlander starts? How's Verlander feeling after two starts? He's a key guy if they're going to win a World Series this year. We'll let you hear from both of them coming up next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.